Welcome everyone to this special podcast of Your Week with St. Luke's. We are continuing to talk about General Conference and what it means to the United Methodist denomination, and in particular to our witness in the community as we try to reach people and awaken disciples for Jesus Christ. Now, we're going to go back a little bit in time, right before COVID, 2019. What happened at the General Conference at 2019 that is really has set up what has gone on in the church for the last few years? You've probably heard a lot about things like disaffiliation and a new denomination or a United Methodist Church split. Well, it all really started 30 years ago when some things were changed in our Book of Discipline, where things were added to our Book of Discipline that made us exclusive. Before the 1980s, we were actually a congregation and a denomination that welcomed everyone, including LGBTQ. We just really sort of didn't have a policy. And back then, actually it was earlier than that, the 60s and 70s, provisions were added to the Book of Discipline that were continued to be built on that made us more of an exclusive denomination when it came to LGBTQ persons. In 2019, it all came to a head. And so we're going to talk about this with Allison Derrick and kind of fill you in on what's been going on and set the precedent for where we are headed in 2024. Let's listen.
Before we get to what would happen at this general conference, let's talk about what happened in 2019, which really is talking about what happened 30 years ago at a general conference. But that's one that a lot of people coming into the United Methodist Church and during COVID probably heard about nationally. So who wants to try and hit that pitch?
All you, Alice.
I'll start us on it. How's that? So I go back to all I ever wanted to do was to go to a general conference. And I got really excited because I got to, you know, we got to go, Derrick and I both got to go 2016, Portland, Oregon. And I do want to say too, yes, I have a tendency to be a little overenthusiastic at times. I know it's a surprise, but it does happen. Well, I got to Portland and literally the town went out for this Methodist conference. They had wrapped buses. They'd put their train stuff, you know, had United, Welcome United Methodist and all this stuff. Well, you know what? I'm excited to see everybody. And you've got a lanyard that says that you're a United Methodist, you know, so, you know, this is who you are kind of. So, you know, I am going up to people that anywhere on the street, you have to remember, right? Exactly what Derrick said before. For some people, not only was this the first time that they ever left their country, for some of them, it was the first time they ever left the home or village that they were raised and born in. And to, literally, you could just see the deer in the headlights look in people's faces, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the cool things that happened was, you know, getting to know people, making relationship, that kind of thing is really cool. Okay. The other thing that came out of 2016, though, was something that we didn't expect per se. And as I said, all I wanted to do was to go to a general conference. Well, in 2016, there was a vote that did not go as well as what we had hoped would happen. And it really got us to a place where there was conversation on the floor of the plenary. Now, this is a big deal. It's like, you know, conference, big deal. And a man by the name of George Howard stood up and made a speech that said, basically, bishops, you've got to lead us through this because we are at a divide. We're at an impasse as a church over the issue of how to think about LGBTQ inclusion in the church, specifically around the issue of gay marriage, because in the U.S. and in all of the states, it had been ratified that we could have gay marriage and that kind of thing. But in other countries, certainly it's still taboo. You couldn't even talk about it, that kind of thing. So there was the issue of gay marriage. And then the other piece, same-sex marriage, the other piece was the issue of full inclusion, allowing pastors who were LGBTQ practicing to be pastors, to be ordained, to be virgin. And so this man stands up, he says, you got to do something that you help us lead. And so we left the conference with a lot unresolved, just a lot mm-hmm. of stuff that just was left open. And the way that they decided to try to help remedy to this was that they formed a commission called the Commission on the Way Forward of 32 people from around the world that could come together and try to tackle what can we do as a church to get us past this impasse around LGBTQ inclusion. And there were folks from all over the spectrum, those who were inclusive, those who were not, all of that. There happened to be
And St. Luker's, one of those 33 from around the world, was our own Alice Williams.
Alice Williams.
Woo-woo!
Yep.
Was brave and courageous.
Mm-hmm.
Was that brave? Was that
stop and faithful of you to follow that invitation by God
mm-hmm.
to represent mm-hmm. so many people. Thank you. Okay, I'm done. Go ahead.
So the only thing I will say is, let me just follow up on that. There were three members from the LGBTQ community, two male and one female, and I was the one female. And here's, you don't know how God prepares you for things until you're in the moment or whatever. Part of it, I think, was my background, because I'd been in human resources at the mouse for so many years. And you deal with a lot of different things. There are union negotiations, you deal with conflict, that kind of stuff. So I had some experience in that. And the other piece is that I grew up in a traditional church. I spoke traditional, meaning that I came from a background where I fully appreciate and understand where people are coming from who struggle with how to be inclusive, right? So there was, I was able to talk with folks about that, but certainly live out who I was and who God wonderfully made me to be as a member of the LGBTQ community. Okay, so we did all this work. That was 18 months. We traveled to Europe. We did all kinds of stuff. We did, we even brought in theologians. We did this, Jen will laugh about this, but we did this colloquy thing where we brought in these learned people from the Methodist Church to talk about issues. And I mean, they were candid conversations about, what does it mean to be LGBTQ in the church today? It's a little side note, God has a great sense of humor, because I ended up being a subject matter expert on gay sex, which is not my subject matter expert. I just want you to know. But for an hour, I met with some of these theologians and kind of talked about that. I'm blushing now. I can even feel it. So there was that. And out of that work, and it was really hard work, there were three plans that were drafted that we wanted to take to a special called session in 2019, right? And so when we walked into this special called session, which the bishops can do, that's the bishops only can call for a special session. There's only been two since 1968 that we've ever engaged in. The bishops called it. We went to St. Louis. Derek, I'm going to let you pick up now, because you were knee deep in this one too.
Yeah, I definitely was in the room. 2019, we were in St. Louis. It began with a prayer gathering, a full day of prayer. And then we went into this work. We did not break up into committees. We were a committee of the whole. And so we had a day where we were a committee perfecting legislation like a committee would. And then there would be another day that we would serve as plenary.
Conference. This was a one topic.
Yeah. It really was. And so a few things happened at this special session. Of the three plans that were, and actually there were other plans, other proposals that were also put in front of us that weren't from the commission, that were there as well. But of those plans, the traditional plan, which my sense is the traditional plan was not the preferred plan of the commission as a whole. I think there are some members of the commission that supported the traditional plan, but it wasn't really worked on as a part of the commission's work. All that to say is the traditional plan is the plan that was passed at the special session. Some other things that happened, particularly around disaffiliation, is that paragraph 2553, was passed as a minority report and added to the Book of Discipline. And this was the paragraph that allowed congregations to disaffiliate because of disagreements within the denomination around human sexuality. At one point, that paragraph also allowed annual conferences to disaffiliate, and that would later be struck down by the Judicial Council. And I'll just say that there was a range of emotions on the floor of the special session when the traditional plan passed. There were protests in the room, both inside and outside the bar of the conference. It was a decision that reverberated definitely throughout the US, but around the world. There were individuals in local congregations who knew very little of what General Conference was, what we were doing, what the traditional plan was. They just knew that something went really wrong at the special session. I actually think we should keep moving on the timeline. But I mean, we can stay here if you want, but go ahead, Alice.
So as dark as that was, I do want to say the traditional plan received 438 votes, or 53%. 53%. They just needed to have a simple majority for this, which, by the way, mm-hmm. kind of in and of itself was different, right? Right. Most things that we vote on require either a two-thirds, or there's a few things that require a three-quarters vote. But this was a simple majority plan vote. 53%, 47% voted no to that. Mm-hmm. While there was great disappointment and heartache and there was also this glimmer of hope, because we realized that even at that time, what was probably more of a conservative grouping of individuals, delegates that had gathered, there was still hope, right? There was still hope. Now, what came out of that?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah.
was kind of a firestorm that started in the annual conferences and their elections of delegates afterwards. Derek, pick it up.
Yeah, so, you know, coming right out of that special session, which you would think those who disagreed with the traditional plan, particularly in the U.S., would sort of kind of put their hands up and say, I guess that's it. But that's actually not what happened. Nope. Somehow, that moment, that special session sort of was a wake-up call to United Methodists, definitely United Methodists in the U.S. And I would say there's definitely mm-hmm. that narrative, but it isn't just the U.S. There's a conversation that is really worldwide on the other side of the special session about who are we as United Methodists? What do we actually want to be known for? And mm-hmm. who do we want to include? And how do we want to have that conversation? Who do we want to be in ministry with? In the U.S., there are some individuals who began to gather broadly across the U.S. connection to sort of say, you know what, we actually don't think this is done. We actually think there is work that can be done, that we can gather ourselves, organize ourselves, and actually reverse what has happened to reject right. and push back on the traditional plan. And so one of those groups is UMC Next, and they had this gathering at Church of the Resurrection in Kansas City, in Leawood, Kansas, rather, Leawood, Kansas. And you know, Adam Hamilton was a part of that conversation, as well as some other folks like Pat Luna. Cynthia Weems was a part of that conversation early on. Jasmine Smothers, so many names that I can't mention them all right now. But they gathered a good number of United Methodists across the U.S. connection. And there was sort of this decision out of the body that we were going to go back to our annual conference sessions that were fastly approaching. And mm-hmm. we were going to go back and make it very clear that we were not going to abide by the traditional plan. Now, some people might call this rebellion and recklessness. I call it the church speaking truth to its power.
Amen.
The church on the ground. And this actually happens a lot with General Conference. If you do sort of the historical work, General mm-hmm. Conference makes a decision, and then that decision gets down to the ground, and the church on the ground says, no, Nope. Right. Nope. And sometimes it's like, why did we say no to this? But sometimes we're like, no.
Yep.
Right. And so,
can I say something?
Go ahead, Jen.
So St. Luker's, we were a part of that.
That's right.
We immediately, our church council stepped up the week after General Conference and put out a statement that we do not agree with the traditional plan. Some of us as clergy I gathered some clergy at St. Luke's with St. Luke's approval. And we said, let's invite as many, I think it was just clergy, or was it clergy and laity? Like, let's invite as many of us that want to come. And we rallied just at, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And we were talking about that in the conference.
How do we move
and
forward?
Then the next got in. And yeah, we held those UMC Next gatherings at St. Luke's. Did the work of strategy, all with you as St. Luker's support.
Absolutely. Right. Which is one of the reasons, I mean, there are many reasons that I think the world of y'all, this was one of those reasons. So we got to annual conference and
we bought the t-shirts.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Right. Oh, right. We did.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's just,
that's right.
Beautiful moments. Yeah. And moments of clarity and moments of decision, moments where people needed to understand that this was not just a policy of the church, but this was affecting people. And I know that there are some folks who had some mixed feelings about t-shirts and what those t-shirts might mean. And, you know, it's pretty incredible. And I'll just say this out loud. It's incredible that, yes, words have an impact on people. Yeah. So if words on a t-shirt made you feel some kind of way, imagine what words in the Book of Discipline due to an entire group of people who are not outside the church. We're inside the church.
Yeah.
We're tithing, we're serving, we're leading, we're praying, we're worshiping. So we got to annual conference, and in Florida, one of the results of our efforts to push back on the traditional plan was to elect a delegation of individuals that are often labeled centrist to progressive. Those are quick and dirty terms. They don't really describe the individuals who make up our delegation, but they were all individuals who essentially said, from their perspective, from their theological position, from the context of their ministry, the traditional plan was untenable if we were going to be the United Methodist Church here in Florida. And so, by being elected to the delegation, we would do what we needed to do to reject the traditional plan and to push to reverse it, to make sure that it was no longer a part of our Book of Discipline. We also passed several resolutions at that annual conference to make it clear as a body that we were rejecting the traditional plan, that we were not going to abide by it, and that we were going to resist it. And it would be one thing if that was just Florida. Like, that would be its own miracle story in Florida, but across the U.S. connection, even in the Southeast, delegations were being elected by, again, kind of the label, quote unquote, centrist to progressives, were elected that were never elected before. People that were not considered electable to general conference and jurisdictional delegations were elected handily. Resolutions were passed, statements were made, and it became really, really clear that the U.S. portion of the United Methodist Church, broadly speaking, and with a majority voice, was not in favor of the traditional plan. We all were sort of speaking to that in different ways, not all uniform, not all the same language, not everybody wore t-shirts, but oh man, it was clear. It was clear to many people, including those who appreciated the traditional plan. It was clear to them, to all of us, that there was going to be a shift, that the shift had already happened.
Right. Yeah. And just so everyone who's not in the know knows, the words on the t-shirt are a portion of our baptismal vows. Yeah. That's what those words were. We didn't make them. Right. Yeah. But important core values as disciples of Jesus Christ, that these are our baptismal vows. And it was a holy time, wasn't it? To see people gather together. Difficult. But most holy things are very difficult and painful. One of my New Testament professors would always say, if it's holy, it's going to be painful. But to see people gather and say, this way is not the way of us.
And I would say even people that would typically, I was, first of all, one of the resolutions that you spoke of, Derek, was written also by St. Luker's Daniel Roop and Warren Willis. I just want to, again, I just want to say, and it was social resistance, and not everybody in St. Luke's agreed, but we agreed around, this is our core values. And so because of our core values and what we believe about Christ-centered love, this is the move we have to make. And we work to try and bring as many people along as possible. And even at annual conference in Florida, I did hear some people who are more conservative on the idea of LGBT inclusions regarding marriage, regarding ordination, that would say, but I can't agree with the traditional plan because the traditional plan had so much teeth,
yeah,
and caused even more harm than the three restrictions we already had. And so, you know, there were, this was also people who wouldn't agree necessarily on those things, but would say, no, this was a step too far.
Two things that happened during that time frame too that I want to call out. One is specific to Florida conference and to us. When the delegates were voted on from 2019 to go to 2020, because that was the next general conference, and it was apparent that it was not, it was going to be more progressive, more inclusive than before. It was a grace-filled moment in that there were people. I remember one person standing up saying, you know, I've been a part of this church. I am more of a conservative person. And I don't know how to react to this because I don't feel that my church supports me anymore. And it was this pivotal moment when everyone around me, at least, said, well, what do you think they've been feeling like for years?
Right.
So there was that final awareness in my mind of, oh, this is the first time for some people that they would have felt what it might be to be in the fringe or in the minority. So there was that. And that was not a rub in your face kind of thing. It was truly an awe. And that person, by the way, was surrounded by people who were there to comfort and to say, this is hard. We understand that, but we've been there. We've been living in this. And then there was another moment, and it involved the St. Luker, and it was just a thing that happened. But there was a voice that stood up and started singing, "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus." Yeah. It was Bradley Roberts. He happened to be there, and he just stood up. And it was one of the most holy moments I think I've ever, I get goosebumps even now. Yeah. Because the entire place broke into song. So there was that. Then the other thing though that started,
we can't just go that fast.
Something you carry with you forever. That's one, right? But there's something else that started to happen because it wasn't all you know, butterflies and rainbows by any means. The other thing that started happening across the country was this push for bishops to bring charges against folk, right? And so one of the things that happened was that during this time frame, the bishops basically went forward with what they called an abeyance, which is still in effect, which is important because what it's done is basically to say, we're not going to follow through on trials until this issue is completely resolved or until we... So that leads us kind of into, that's one of the things that we're going to have to tend to or think about as we lead into our general conference in April.
Right. So when all of this happened, we had this paragraph that was voted on in 2019, predominantly so that if you couldn't live with the traditional plan because of your context, your theological beliefs, your understanding of inclusivity, you could petition to leave the United Methodist Church for a certain amount of time with your property if you paid into pastoral pension, and your apportionments. Those are big words that we'll need a thesaurus for everybody to understand. But basically, it was for people who couldn't live with the traditional plan. But as time went by, as COVID happened, as things changed in the United States especially, traditional people who had put forth the traditional plan and supported the traditional plan, so I use that word not pejoratively, I'm using it just in alignment with the plan, and as it was titled, a traditional view of scripture and marriage, they decided it was untenable for them to stay. And they began to use, in an ironic shift, they began to use paragraph 2553 to petition to leave. Did I shorten that too much? Did I get that right?
That was right in there. Yeah.
Which is where the word disaffiliation and the season of disaffiliation that we were in for the last really 18 months to 2 years,
yeah, where
a new denomination was started, right? Global Methodist Church,
which
are predominantly supporters of and the people who created what they called the traditional plan.
Yes.
I'm a traditional person myself, but... Yeah, you know, so these words are very oddly used. And so, gosh, how many churches have disaffiliated? Now, not all joined the Global Methodist Church and not all left because of inclusivity. I know churches that are very inclusive, but they left because of just this mess. Yep. They just couldn't stay anymore because of the mess. And they are independent churches.
Yeah.
But how many did we lose in the United States? Do we know that answer?
We lost around 25% of our churches in the U.S. And I don't know that actual number. But between 2020 to 2023, we lost 25% of churches across the U.S.
And it, Jen, if I could just kind of point to that. There may be more that will leave because there are some churches who wanted to wait until 2024 General Conference to see if there will be either one, a change that would either be more beneficial, easier to leave financially, so we wouldn't be using paragraph 2553 any longer. So they're waiting to see if that will happen. By the way, I don't think that's going to happen at all. I don't think there'll be a new exit plan. So there's that.
Right.
But then the other thing is there are some churches that are waiting to see what happens at 2024 because they may believe that either the traditional plan is going to continue, right? Mm-hmm. Or that the things, so we may find that the dust hasn't fully settled yet. We think the majority by far have that we're going to disaffiliate have left, but there may be some.
Okay, so what that means though is the people, the delegates, most of those who disaffiliated, if they were delegates, they're not delegates anymore.
Most. Some, it's really difficult sometimes to let go of power. And so there are some individuals within both the U.S. and outside the U.S., some delegates who have been clear about their affiliation with Wesley Covenant Association, their support of the Global Methodist Church. They've helped congregations disaffiliate in the U.S. They've encouraged congregations to find a way to leave outside the U.S., but they are still properly seated delegates because they are members of a United Methodist Church that didn't disaffiliate. And that's just the nature of the thing. But I will say that there were many who recognized that let your yes be yes and your no be no, as Jesus says, right? I think that's in the Gospel of Luke, actually. And so there are some that, out of an act of integrity, out of a desire to just move on, did resign from their delegations and have left the United Methodist Church to go where the Spirit was leading them. And so some new individuals have risen in some other delegations. One delegation, just to name, the Alabama West Florida delegation, which at one point was primarily traditionalist, is now primarily, again, we're using some quick and dirty terms, primarily centrist. Mm-hmm. And that was a change that came because individuals said, you know what? My congregation's leaving, I'll go with them. And that means I'm going to resign from my post. So, that has happened as well. And it is helpful as we continue to think about the ways that we want to move the church away from the traditional plan. So.
Thanks for hanging in and listening. That was a lot of information and a lot of history, but I hope you can see sort of where and how we have been at work as a congregation in the midst of this behind the scenes, but also how important it has been for us, especially in Orlando, to live into our core values of Christ-centered love lived out through hospitality, acceptance, community, discipleship, and service. We've really sort of set the pace for what it means to be the United Methodist Church moving forward, because we are a place where everyone is welcome. And where we're living into this as best we can, holding to the book of discipline as long as we can, and understanding that this is a kingdom of God justice issue. And so we're glad that you've been with us. Again, if you'd like to know more, we're starting some book studies. Multiplying Love is a wonderful book by Paul Chilcote that you can read that talks about this. Pastor Jad is going to be leading a book study by Steve Harper. And this is why we're also teaching Making Sense of the Bible, because this is a way for you to understand who we are, not only as United Methodists, but how we read and interpret scripture. That is the foundation for our inclusive attitude and our welcoming of everyone. So we hope you'll continue to kind of look at resources about that. And next week, come back, because we're going to talk about what's going to happen at 2024 General Conference, which starts very soon at the end of April. So we hope you'll come back. See you next week.